Podcast. I'm your host Josh Smith. Joining me is co-host Jeremy Litton.
Woo!
And Greg Sowers, first time back on the podcast since last season. Same for Litton.
It's good to be back.
And yeah. Jeremy Ray. How's it going, Jeremy?
Fuck yeah.
Oh, it's going fantastic.
Awesome. On episode 28, we will be talking about our performance in the NWA Regionals in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Boo!
I thought
it went well.
We finished 2-4 and just missed out on qualifying after losing in the Death Bracket title game versus Ridley Park Wiffle League. And should anything happen to any team that is unable to make it, we will be tapped to succeed.
Not that we hope any team has some more unfortunate circumstances.
No, in my opinion, the only thing worse than not qualifying is getting to go because someone couldn't make it. That's getting sloppy seconds. So we're going to move on to dive into our performance. So Jeremy, you're the only one out of the four of us here who is actually there. So we're going to be talking to you quite a bit. So you're going to have to carry this first segment for us, buddy. Now, as far as our team goes, who could hit the ball?
It took us a while to actually hit the ball. That's the problem. We came out slow because we actually had a perfect game thrown against us in the very first game against AWAA. And it took us till about maybe the third inning of the next game to even get a hit going. But I thought Pat Horton was probably one of our better hitters, one of our more clutch hitters too. And he always seemed to keep us in games whenever we needed it.
What about other hitters from other teams? Which teams really could hit the ball that we played against?
Oh, it's AWAA was by far the best team there. Nate Cruz was probably one of the better hitters that was at that tournament. Jimmy Cole, he was another one that could flat out hit.
Okay, so moving on to pitching, an area that we've always struggled in. Who was able to pitch on our team? Who actually delivered? I feel like we brought maybe the best team we've ever put together, and we were pretty deep on pitchers. We had you, Bryce Clark. We had Ian Handy, who's had some pitching experience on the regional level before from last year. So who really delivered this year?
I mean, I could be biased, but I mean, I thought I did. I kept us in games. And that only because I could hit the zone. Whenever the time came to hitting the zone, Bryce couldn't hit it. Ian couldn't hit it. Pat was having to lob the ball in there pretty much just to hit the strike zone. Like, no, and I was already wasted for the final game. Ian had one really good game against WWF where he ended up with the win. I gave up a total of 5 runs that whole tournament and pitching in 2 games. So I think I did. Lavelli's probably AWAA. Lavelli's probably the one that is the better pitcher I've seen in quite some time. Lavelli would throw a ball that would pretty much touch the grass and come straight back up, and there was nothing that you can do.
I'm really disappointed in our performance, especially on the pitching level. We practiced quite a bit going into this regional, and I had us hyped up pretty good to at least qualify for this tournament. But it was a tough regional. I mean, no regional is a cakewalk in my opinion, but since we've been competing on the regional qualifying bracket, we've been playing in what many consider to be the most challenging regional of the pool this year. So moving on to our actual performance during the pool play, We had a 0-3 start going into the fourth game of the pool play series to finish things up. So what happened those first three games?
We just couldn't hit. That's what it came down to. Our pitching wasn't bad. It's just we couldn't produce any runs. It was a problem. I think that that fatigue was also a part of that, because we got in about 2 o'clock in the morning, having to travel almost 8 to 9 hours, getting about 3 or 4 hours of sleep, getting back up and getting ready to play, while others got to pretty much sleep in their own beds because we were playing in their backyard.
So moving on to the death bracket itself. During the final game of pool play, we played WWF and finally picked up our first win, but it was too late. We're already seated very low in the death bracket, and we played against Gaul, Greater Auburn Wiffles League, the Gaul Stars. So we'd already played them once in pool play, and we actually managed to squeak past them to advance to the death bracket final. What was so different about this time that you played them versus the last time? How come you won this time versus the first time? Why did it go differently?
They didn't start their ace. They didn't start Jason Fresho. I think Dave Pierce was the one that was pitching. He was just a little bit slower. He had a good, solid rise ball. But eventually, after seeing him about 3 or 4 times, we were starting to pick up on the speed and picking up on how to hit the ball. And the first time that we faced the other team, Jason, we just couldn't hit him at all.
We defeated them, then we moved on to the final, and it was a do-or-die game. Yeah, a do-or-die game against Ridley Park Wiffle League. This was a team we hadn't played yet, and it's a team of mostly 18, 19-year-olds. I think they're from the Philadelphia area, young guys, but they could hang. Now, early on in the game, thanks to a lot of walks, and I think we probably had some hits and a couple of home runs. I think there was a grand slam at one point. Stayed by the balls, ended up with a 10-run lead, I think 12-2 or 13-3 or something like that. And then it all started to go wrong. So, Jeremy, what the hell happened here? We pretty much had this put away. Everyone was pretty much planning for us to finally qualify for the first time since we've started the qualifying process. So just, I know it's painful, but dig up those bad memories. Pick those scabs. Walk me through what the hell happened.
There's issues on both sides of the ball. Honestly, we got way ahead of ourselves. We got too relaxed. And, I mean, we just stopped hitting the fucking zone, and it was just frustrating. It was frustrating to sit on the sideline and watch walk after walk after walk and not being able to do anything about it other than tell them to lob the ball. And it's a problem if you can't even lob a ball in there to where they can at least just hit a ball. That's a problem on our end, and that was no bueno. The problem was is that we stopped hitting the zone. We got way too comfortable with a 10-run lead, and there's no excuse, no excuse for going up 13-3 and still losing. We stopped hitting at that point. We stopped playing, and they didn't quit, and that's the problem. And that next time that will be fixed, because I'd rather beat a team 84-3. And keep the heat going, other than going up 13-3 and be comfortable with that.
A lot of other players on the team are really passionate about those calls, and I just want to ask you, before we even get into that, do you think those calls really affected whether or not we qualified or not, or do you think it was just our performance? I mean, you could argue that, you know, starting 0-3 in pool play was already foreboding as it was, and then, you know, having accuracy issues. I mean, can you really blame those calls for why we're not punching our ticket for Morenci, or do you really subscribe to the fact that those calls are why we aren't going, or it's not, or are you somewhere in the middle?
Yes and no. I'm more in the middle, because we shouldn't have to rely on calls like that to get us into a national tournament, especially with a 10-run lead. Absolutely, I mean, that's inexcusable. That's a piss poor performance. I don't, after that, after the way that we blew that lead, there, I don't think we should have gone. I don't think we deserved to win on that one, because there's no excuse for that. But on the other hand, if the call was made, it would have ended an inning, and it would have ended at least five more runs for them. And we lost, I believe, 18-15 or 18-16, one of the two. And those five runs make a difference.
Jeremy, I've got somebody else on the line here, your teammate Bryce Clark. So I can ask you this question here. There were a few controversial calls made during that final death bracket game versus Ridley Park. I want to ask you both, what happened? Jeremy, we'll start with you, and you can kind of run down the calls here. I know you guys are, Jeremy, you appear to be a little more passive on this, and Bryce, I know you're real amped about some of these calls here, and I just kind of want to hear both sides of the story here. So Jeremy, why don't you tell us what happened?
Well, there was four distinct calls that really changed a lot of the game and the outcome of everything. But the very first call that happened was the biggest call that happened throughout the entire game. It was a runner interference call that wasn't called.
You know all about that, don't you?
And yes, I know all about that, because we actually made that call and got that right in our league, because that's what we do. We do things right. Tyler Roush was going for a ground ball. He was playing around like shortstop area, so he was running to the ball, and it was coming in the same line of the path of the runner, which, in case the fielder has the right to the ball, because the runner has 3 feet either way to avoid the fielder. That did not happen. He ran into Tyler, and was called safe. And Ian was pitching at that point, and we have already starting to blow a 10-run lead. It was 13-8. Whenever the guy was called safe, you could just see it on Ian's face. I really think that they need to look into that rule a hell of a lot more. Look at that play as an example, and because initially he was called out, and eventually he was called safe by all four umpires that were there. So I was a little disappointed in that. Actually, I was very disappointed. The next call, it was the same inning. We were up to bat. Bryce Clark was running into third. There was two outs, and Bryce Clark ran into the fielder, ran into his elbow. The guy was holding on to the ball, but ran into his elbow. The only thing that touched Bryce was the guy's elbow. The ball never touched Bryce, and they called him out. He never tagged him, never did anything, and that was the final out of that inning. And last time I checked, you have to tag somebody with the ball in order to get them out. Number three, I hit a ball. Ball goes out into the outfield. Bryce Clark is rounding third, is right at that line. I mean, right at that that line where if the ball gets back to the pitcher, he has to come back, but he's rounding third. I thought he was way over the line. Ball gets back to the pitcher. He's called back to go back to third base. We ended up not scoring a run after that. There was two outs, and so that cost us another run. And the final one was the very last inning. Josh Blair was up to bat. I put him in for Ian Handy because Ian wasn't hitting anything, and we needed to fix something. And Josh goes up there, hits a ball, and there is no way in hell that this ball hit his foot, because it still kept going to left field. The umpire right beside me said that ball hit his foot. I told him, I was like, I see the same thing, and that didn't happen. He's the only one that had the worst view that made that call. Josh ended up getting safe before he was called back, and he eventually struck out. And that gave us another out in that inning. And so that's four calls against us to none. And that can't happen. At that point, you have to start saying, all right, we gave him this call, we gave him that call, we gave him that call. We'll give him one. Give us one. That's all I asked for. And that's piss poor performance on the officiating crew on that one.
All right, Bryce, we got you on the line here. You were also there at the tournament. So paint me your picture of this. I know Jeremy...
at least in the past, he sounds like he's got a little bit more sour over time. And the last time I talked to him about it, I know you got pretty amped about the situation there. Tell me your thoughts on these calls that occurred during that final game.
I will say this: the first one, which was the interference call, that was the biggest one. The other three, I can kind of see mistakes being made, but not on the runner's interference. That was ridiculous. So, Jeremy already told you the situation, what happened. Got a ground ball. Roush was having his attempt to field the ball. The runner ran directly into him. The rule is, for a runner, if a fielder is actively fielding a ball, then you have 3 feet in the baseline, on either side of the baseline, to avoid that fielder. That guy, the runner, refused to use his 3 feet, ran into the fielder, therefore he should have been ruled out for runner's interference. It's not as if Roush already booted the ball or it got by Roush. Roush never had his opportunity yet. So the call is to be runner's interference, not fielder's interference. Whatever the call was initially made, the runner was safe. Of course, I was mad, so I started arguing. There's a lot of us in the dugout there. We thought it was a pretty crappy call. You know, as I went and asked for an explanation, the guy told me that it is a rule, a baseball rule, the fielder has to get out of the runner's way to field the ball. And I was like, you need to look that rule up. And he wouldn't look it up. He was like, no, I looked this rule like 3-4 years ago. And it's a Major League Baseball rule. I'm right. I'm like, no, you're not right. So I kept going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, wasn't getting anywhere. So he was like, we're just going to play. So I'm still mad. I'm probably yelling at this point. I think Jeremy told me to shut up a couple times.
not just you.
It was poor officiating. They only talked there for 30 seconds also, which looks even more worse. But if like a person asks you to look up a rule and they won't look the rule up, that looks bad on you guys, on the NWLA, on the officials. It looks bad because it should take longer than 30 seconds. And secondly, they thought they knew the rule, but they didn't. Well, that also leaves a bad taste in my mouth. So I'm just upset on the whole runner's interference call, what should have been called rather than fielder's interference. They don't understand the rule. But later on in that game, I showed that umpire the rule on my phone. He's like, oh, well, it must be college baseball or something. So I'm like, no, it's the same at all levels of baseball. I'm like, the runner or the fielder has the right way to the ball. It's the fielder right of way rule. You know, he was wrong, and there's got to be a bylaw or something that goes around that. And I started laughing. I'm like, dude, you just got it wrong. I was like, you're bad. Whatever. I'm still mad about it. I'm getting mad about it now thinking about it. The other three calls, like the foul ball on Josh, yeah, sometimes that's going to happen. I don't think it was a foul ball because the ball went. If you're a right-handed hitter and the ball hits you in the foot, it's going to have a crazy spin. It's usually going to shoot off to the right side of the field. This ball wasn't the left side of the field. It went straight. So I don't know what they were thinking, but I can see sometimes they get that call wrong. You know, and then like me at third base, not getting tagged. Sometimes if they didn't have a good angle, since the ball did beat me there, they would assume that I'm out. That happens. And I don't know about me around the third base because I was, of course, running. Everybody else had a better view of that where I was on the field at that time. The umpires there wouldn't take time to figure it out. Everybody on our side was yelling. And the people who was running that tournament would not come out and set the record straight when they could have. They had that opportunity, and they didn't do it. It was poorly ran, and I'm upset about it.
Pretty scathing words there. Some would say undeserved, but some would say poignant and necessary to say. So, having went over probably the roughest part of the content of this podcast, we're going to go and talk about the overall thoughts on the regional itself. This regional was not the one we went to last year. We went to Morenci to play in the Midwest Regional. Last year was the East Regional, and this ballpark, Diamond City Park, was built a few years ago with a grant from PepsiCo for about $10,000. Kevin Sickle put it together. It's one of the most sought-after fields to visit and play at in the country. So I kind of want to know what your all's thoughts on the venue was.
They only have one really good field, which is the one the championship game was played on. Maybe had the green monster left. I can't remember what old field was in the center field. They just had like a shallow right field. I mean, it was pretty neat. I mean, the field itself was very nice. They just had one really nice field. The other field was whatever. Just a normal wiffle ball field, just how we set up our temporary fence and whatnot. But they actually had fence. It's a thing. But the one field was really nice. I'll give them that.
out of all the places that I've played at, I mean, it was neat. The big the green monster was pretty neat to play on. I still really like the Columbus fields that were there with the breakaway fences. I like that a hell of a lot better than I did the green monster.
The overall, I think Bryce kind of gave me his thoughts on this, but the overall event being ran, we're in our first year post Galloway. Galloway didn't really run it last year. He sort of let the committee take it over, but he still provided the capital and the staffing for it. Now we're in the first real post-Galloway year of this tournament. So how do you guys think this tournament was ran?
Poorly.
I mean, it's been ran like every other tournament to me. Like it's... I wouldn't say poorly. I just think someone might be a little bit bitter still. But I mean, it wasn't too bad. I mean, there wasn't really any long breaks. Everyone, the main game was played on the best field, ready to go on everything. It was umped poorly, absolutely. But by means of being ran, I thought it was fun. I thought Carl did his things. I just wish that they would get the stats up and going just to see where we actually, you know, stood out compared to the other teams that were there.
Yeah, I've also heard that they are not going to be posting the video. They were using a cell phone or a tablet much of the time when they were periscoping the games, which even if it's not very good quality, I think just for the sake of completion, for upholding that standard of completion that Galloway has set in years past, that's not going to be happening, and the stats would have been posted by now, even without professional stats keepers there. Galloway kind of left a high bar, and that's a pretty hard act to follow, and right now they do not have the finances with just that entry fee to do that. Now, I'm hoping, at least in Morenci, with Michael Sessions and all of his connections in town there, that he'll be able to provide a pretty big wow factor to keep people buzzing about this tournament. But as for the regionals, at least in the Wilkes-Barre region, beyond the nice field, it looks like it's a pretty standard, otherwise non-NWLA wow factor tournament. So is what my overall impression is from watching the videos and listening to other people talk about it. It was ran similar as best as could be expected without Galloway. So when we come back, we're going to be looking at more of the big picture of our league in terms of the NWLA tournament when we come back. Clark is on the line. Greg Sowards and Jeremy Linton are joining me here with Jeremy Ray to talk about the big picture regarding our league and the NWA tournament itself. So guys, I'm going to ask, what did we do wrong this year? Is it the same thing we've done in the past? Jeremy, your thoughts.
Well, I think we took Jeremy Ray again. And this has been an issue since day one. I mean, I think Drew McClanahan did great that first year. And I think it's Jeremy Ray's fault for any poor performance.
I didn't throw 21. I didn't give up 21 runs in one game. I haven't given up 21 runs since I've been in the NWA.
I have some feelings on this. I think part of the problem is we're not cutthroat enough to just take the players that need to go to win a championship. We take some guys we like that I don't think necessarily need to go. If we have one or two more players that are of that elite status that we should take, that we need to take, I think the problem is a lot of times we kind of get mushy and we let guys go that aren't the best because we're afraid to tell them no and upset them.
Like Jeremy Ray?
Not like Jeremy Ray. I think Jeremy Ray is one of our best assets with his experience in the game, and he is partially talented.
Oh, wow.
I'm just kidding. He is a great asset in talent. He's a great asset in experience and in knowledge. I think we're not cutthroat enough when it comes to pitching. You know, when a guy walks, the base is loaded, and then walks and run or two, he's done. It's time to cut our loss.
I tell you why Jeremy Ray isn't cutthroat enough. It's called slow pitch. We went to slow pitch. That's what's caused our sluggishness in the last couple years.
I don't agree with that. I think slow pitch on our end
I think
is,
slow pitch makes you slow.
I think we're meandering, and we're going to stop that. to counter Greg's point here, I don't necessarily agree that we took players who couldn't compete. I think there was hardly any foul on this team. We, in my opinion, built the best team we have ever built for an NWA event, even eclipsing the talent that we took on the 2014 team. We had more practices from the proper distances. I think we had over a half dozen practices going into this thing. There were some games that were had after the tournaments were over, some scrimmages and things like that to keep us sharp and constantly building the team to make sure we took the right people. So I don't necessarily agree that we took people who didn't deserve to go. You have to take a full team, especially when you're traveling that distance. What if someone can't go, Greg? You got to have somebody who's going to be able to fill that spot. Bryce, you have not had any previous experience in NWA events, so you've got more of a fresh perspective on why we may or may not have qualified this year. So give me your thoughts on why what did we do wrong this year?
I think we could take a better rate. But, you know, not everybody was available at that time. But, you know, being my first experience at that tournament, what hurt us the most was hitting more at the bottom of the lineup. When we got into tournament play, we moved some things around.
Good thoughts. So we're going to move on to a controversial question here. I've got a couple loaded questions for everybody here. I think everybody really knows my feelings on the NWA tournament as a whole. My love for the NWA as an association will never wane. We've been a part of it since 2012. This league since its inception. We joined it, I think, in 2007 when it started in our old league. So I've been involved with this association for 10 years.
Greg and I.
And I love it. But the tournament has always sort of been a very divisive subject within our league. And it's been a couple years now since I've really been interested in it. The only reason I went last year was to support the team that I had no role in building. So we've had our checkered pass with this tournament. 2013, we accepted a forfeit that really caused some rifts during that year. 2014, we were petitioning for something to do to curb the walking problem. We walked our fair share of people, but it was mostly everybody else who was just walking. So many people, we got to do something to curb the problem. We're problem solvers at this league, and we try to keep it even and competitive and keep the game moving. You got to keep the game moving. This isn't baseball. I think it's kind of a shame when you have to resort to MLB rules when you're in a pinch. That's why HWO has the biggest and longest and most thorough rule book in the country. They don't come any thicker. Ain't that right, Jeremy?
Right.
Hell yeah. So, I'm going to just say something here, make a claim in a form of a question. Does the NCAA tournament and its committee have an issue with the HWL? Really? Let's get both sides of the story here. There's some obvious bias here from me here with compelling evidence that I could go on and on about that we've gone on in articles and previous podcasts that I will not indulge in. But I also think we're our own worst enemy by not having the talent necessary to make a lot of noise in these events. So, guys, I just want to... Am I the crazy? Am I the only one that thinks that maybe there's some sort of grudge between the tournament and the people who run it and our league? Who wants to go first on this one?
Sometimes I think you are. I think you're like one of those 9/11 conspirators. With a lot of evidence, I mean, it could say that they do. I really personally don't think they have a grudge against us. We just always are on the short end of that stick, and anything that would happen would involve us. It's just like we just have a curse over us right now, just kind of like the Chicago Cubs did for the longest time until they finally broke that curse. I mean, it's right now we are just very unlucky in any national setting tournament with the NWLA, and I really don't think they have anything personal against us. If they did, they wouldn't. I consider a lot of the ones that are on the staff to be friends, and I mean, they wouldn't be friends if they were really looking out to make sure that we always got screwed over.
Keep your enemies close, or your friends close, and your enemies closer, Jeremy Ray. You know the old saying, they're nice to you because I think they really might have a grudge against us, given the evidence that I've read by Josh and even by other conspirators, conspiracy theorists, like Doc Brown. Anyway, point being here is I really do think that maybe Josh, that first year, you shouldn't have taken the forfeit.
Shouldn't have followed the rules.
Real stupid asshole me. Move. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, like it's cursed us.
Style thing. You just sometimes you just don't do it.
Jeremy Ray, I don't think you should have argued the rules this year. I think that put that screwed us over.
I think a major part of all this is they just have a problem. They want to be in control when it's on the conference call and they're all doing it before the year. They're in control of everything because it's not happening live. But once it happens live, they have trouble taking control and being in charge and making calls, because that shouldn't have been an issue. If you guys make a rule call, you know, the rules committee, the guys that are running it should have stepped in, not letting some asshole umpire take care of it. That's not even a legitimate umpire, just another player. They should have stepped in and said, "Here's the rule. Here's the ruling. Play ball." Right. And it's not just with our league and with our team. They just have a problem overall of stepping into situations and saying, you know, this is the rule, this is the call. You know, when an umpire or a referee in a pro sport makes a mistake, you know what they get? They get a fine for it. You can't do that with volunteer guys or guys you're bringing in to do this special tournament. You're not going to fine them or, you know, suspend them or anything like that, stupid shit like that. But they need to step in, and this is the reason we took the forfeit in that original year. The reason we took the forfeit is it was the rules.
And the umpires insisted. They walked off the field. They said, this is done. We are moving on to the next field, and they took a break.
Yeah.
It wasn't an option at that point.
And I think Greg's got a very valid point with the fact that you can make the rules, but if you're insisting someone else enforce those rules,
you need to make sure you're, you know, watching the watchers.
Well, you have to back the play. Yeah. You can't say the rule is if you're 15 minutes late, you forfeit, and then shrug your shoulders and be like, well, whatever you want to do. That's the rule. You made that rule for a reason. You know, you didn't make that rule in the thought process of, well, nobody will ever break this. No one's ever going to be late. You know, you broke that rule so nobody would be late.
Yeah. I feel like we're getting a little too specific meandering around a little bit. So, Bryce, if you don't want to comment on this, this is fine, where you don't really have previous experience, where I kind of pumped you a little bit there, where this is really your only contact with the NCAA tournament or any subsequent events.
I just don't know about the whole conspiracy thing. You know, the only thing I'm thinking about is, I think it has to do with people not knowing the rules, not knowing how to enforce the rules, and the tournament being poorly run. Those are my three things I want to say. I don't think there's like a conspiracy where they hate us, but I think those are three big things. It wasn't ran very well. The umpires had a lack of knowledge of rules. And then not having someone who does know the rules not step in to make sure it's correct. That's my big three things.
What's interesting about your take on that, that I kind of want to run with here, is that the people who did the umpiring are people who are actually on the committee that runs this tournament. Justin Tompkins, and I'm not really sure who else, did the officiating for...
Ryan Bush was one of them.
Ryan Bush isn't on the committee, but he has played in every single NCAA tournament and is regarded by many as one of the elite wiffle ball players in the country in the past decade. So with two very knowledgeable players, one of them, Justin basically runs this thing now with Sam Skibbe. They've sort of taken this off of Chris's hands. So as far as having umpires that are not knowledgeable about the rules, I don't agree, which is what makes me call some of these things into question. Sam Skibbe and some others that are part of the committee ran the regional in Minnesota in the Twin Cities and were not there. So you didn't have the entire committee there. So actually having a powwow with an entire committee was not possible. And to cut costs so that it's feasible to even have the regionals in the tournament in the first place, they decide to officiate themselves. There has always been issues with officiating in NCAA tournaments. We've had issues every year.
Yeah, but you know, the NFL went to replacement refs, and look how much of a joke that was.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about this.
But anyway, I think it's... It's really asking a lot for the committee to also officiate. I think it's a step too far.
Let's just say this real quick. When a guy looks at me and tells me that the runner has the right of way in baseball, and he's like 100% about it, that guy's an idiot. And there's not very many rules that I don't know in baseball. And when he says that, it makes me question, what does that guy know? Apparently nothing, because he was trying to say it's a Major League Baseball rule. When I proved that wrong, he said, well, it's just like, what about college baseball? I'm like, no, it's an all of baseball. From T-ball on up, that is a freaking rule. That's the only thing I want to say about that.
Yeah.
That's just a lack of knowledge. It's just being an idiot.
Well, it could be a lack of knowledge, or you could drink the Kool-Aid and see sound and hear color and come to my end of the spectrum and be of the opinion that maybe nobody wants us, of those that matter, wants us in Morenci. And I have a plethora of information that I'm about ready to spout about that proves that point. And it all starts about with our first time in this tournament. 2013, we accepted a forfeit, and it was part of the rules. The umpires made it so without our request, and walked away. It went to Galloway, where he should have just said, yeah, that's the rule, but instead waffled on it and offered no opinion, wanted to stay out of it because he was also a manager of the PWL team. Everybody hated us after that, and we got the cold shoulder from almost every single team the rest of the tournament, which didn't happen to be very long because we were eliminated by PWL promptly after that. The next year we came back, with a team that everyone predicted would finish last. We finished, I think, ninth because of the point system. We actually finished with a better win-loss record than PWL. But because of the point system they came up with, we didn't finish in the top eight. We made a lot of noise about the walking issue, not just from us. We spoke on behalf of some others that had spoken with us in private. And then the 2015 season is when Tompkins executed his really revolutionary idea of the regional qualifier to try to spread the NWLA experience to areas that may not have been getting it otherwise, and trying to expose this tournament to other leagues to get them introduced to it to increase competition. A fantastic idea from the start. And then a lot of roadblocks prevented us from getting a team together. We were already experiencing some issues getting a team together on our own. And then as soon as we dropped out, the stipend idea came out, almost like they were waiting for us to drop out, which really pissed me off. 2016, we get a team together without my support as far as building it. I went just to watch and to support the guys. We had a couple really shit calls in that Leroy game that led to us not qualifying for that. That's pretty much as unassailable is why we did not play in Columbus last year. Having said that, I will admit this 500 times or more, Leroy had the better team in Columbus. They finished in the top eight, shocked a lot of people. We did not have the team to shock anybody. We had a pretty piss-poor team. But the fact is, we did not punch our ticket to Columbus because of a crucial shit call that Leroy pissed and moaned about, and the umpires eventually went their way on it. Now, that brings us to this year, where we had four incredibly shitty back-to-back controversial calls all in the same game. And I also kind of go with Jeremy on the give-and-take rule. The blind squirrel has to get that nut eventually. Why are we 0-4 on close calls in a tournament where we are playing a team who did not meet hardly any of the prerequisites to be competing in that region in the first place? No website, no statistics, no game video, no nothing. Ridley Park should not have been allowed to play in the regional, period. We were eliminated by a team who did not meet the prerequisites to play in the regional tournament. And it's for this reason, and several reasons aforementioned, of this tournament's incapability or unwillingness to abide by their own rules to the full letter, that has led to teams not getting the full experience as designed for this tournament, namely ours, speaking from experience. Now, that is quite the indictment. Does anyone have any challenges to that?
I think they're really nice people. You shouldn't be so mean.
I'm not being mean. I'm friends with these people and talk to them frequently. I just am saying, as far as a character, it's a character thing.
My big thing is, though, I mean, still, you take away those crap calls, they're not in the same league as us. They're not. We would have been up 13-7 at that point, I believe, if we would have got out of that inning with the interference call. We had the top of the order coming up. We would have got those runs back easily. Ian was in a group pitching well, and that would have been game over. We would have just rode Ian's arm the rest of the way. We would have scored 2-3 runs here and there. They probably would have never freaking scored. It would have been game over. But due to that call taking us out of our focus, we were so hung up on that one call, they were able to chip away at the lead. Ian wasn't no longer able to focus because he's mad about that call. He didn't hit the strike zone. Then we had to put in an injured Pat Horton to pitch. It just changes the whole scope of the game.
Yeah.
What it didn't need to be.
I guess
that's the big thing.
I guess my main issue is we have a talent issue in our league. Maybe we don't deserve to qualify for Morenci this year. Clearly that's the case, at least at the beginning. We had an 0-3 start. We didn't have the team, apparently. But then I just find it extra insulting, insult to injury, that we have four horrible calls against a team that, by definition, according to the prerequisites, as determined by the committee, that we are eliminated by such a team who they've willy-nilly allowed to play and compete. And to do the disservice of making horrible calls again and again on the heels of previous history with our league, We may not have had the talent, but we at least met the prerequisites. We have been playing by the rules since 2013, and we are getting bent over the barrel again and again. And we've had these issues before in previous years, but I think this is unabashed collusion. Yes, I'm drunk, but that's okay, because these are my feelings, and we talk about feelings when we're drunk, boys. All right
there, Alex Jones. You need to calm down.
All right, so let's move on.
Please.
You know what? I rambled on quite a bit there, but I really do think there's some food for thought. What other league has experienced such bullshit with this tournament?
I challenge you.
Point out another league that's experienced the same amount or more bullshit directly than this league. So we'll move on to the next question.
When are we going to host the regionals?
No.
Oh.
The next question is going to be, what do we do next year to finally qualify for this thing? Or is it time to pack it in and stop chasing this? Bryce and Jeremy, I'd really like to hear your thoughts on this first.
You go first, Bryce.
All right, well, what I think is, next year, it's new year, clean slate. I think big thing is, we need to quit focus on what everybody else is doing. Just go and play wiffle ball. Who cares? There's part of it, you know, this is still wiffle ball. It's for fun. We want to win, obviously. Maybe we're taking it a little bit too serious. But, you know, maybe not worrying about people not following prerequisites, blah, blah, blah. Quit worrying about what the umpires are doing. Just control the things we can control.
My thoughts are, in our league, people need to quit having feelings. Period.
Yeah.
And be more understanding of where talent lies and where, you know, understand what is actually better for our league.
Can you please stop talking about me? I need to have my feelings.
I'm not talking about you, buddy.
I feel bad about only scoring one home run my entire career and then retiring.
What I'm going to go with on that is that we need to also focus on, especially with pitching, understanding that they are going to walk. If you cannot hit that zone, they will sit there with the bat on their shoulder. You have to take speed off of your pitching just to hit the zone. I don't think I'm going to pitch next year. I think I'd rather just fall into the role as manager, like what Bryce was saying, and just roll with that. And let me take complete control of that and not take things personal if you don't get asked. There's a reason why I want the ones to play that I would ask. I mean, I see a specific purpose for it. And, I just think a lot of the people's feelings would get hurt, and they need to just, you know, stop thinking about that and, you know, stop being selfish and start looking at it at the league perspective of it's better for the league if I'm not going.
I agree with both of you. I think we have to be more cutthroat in our decision-making going to nationals. It's a competitive situation. It's not a fun situation. It's not a fun competition. You're not going up there to have fun. You're not driving 9-10 hours to have fun. We need a manager that is not a player. Because in the past, we've had guys that were on the team and managing it. And it's hard to make those decisions when you're one of the people out there playing because you're focused on playing. We need people that are strictly have, you know, there are roles for everyone to play on a team going to nationals. There's some guys that they're just there to pitch. There's some guys that are just there to hit and field. You know, if that's your position, you need to know that going into it. You need to know what you're there to do.
I think what we're all trying to say here is we need to build the right team. But for what I believe that this league has had a turnover problem season to season. We had more return players this year than what we've had since 2015, which is a good start. But where we basically hit the reset button as far as players go, and I don't know why that is, it's definitely not a choice. That just seems to be what happens.
It's your abrasive personality, Josh.
I don't run this thing, so I don't buy that.
I think it's a lot of single guys, a lot of guys with trouble with commitment.
Yeah. Maybe. But where we don't really know, we don't know where the talent is on the individual basis in a lot of cases. We knew a lot of the guys on the Mothman were good. Jeremy had the experience. Jeremy was really the only super experienced person on this team. And there were a couple people that went to regionals last year, so that's pretty limited experience. So we need to get a better gauge on who has the talent and can they come. And I think we took the 8 most talented guys who were available to go this time. Now, that's hard to do when you're having to travel 8 hours one way to the regional. So in a way, the isolation this league experiences geographically does not do us much credit. Which is kind of one of the many reasons that I am saying maybe it's time to pack it in. We have played 4 times now, and we've had mixed results. We haven't qualified since the qualification era has started. We finished dead last the first time and finished about the middle of the pack at our high water mark in 2014. We are what we are in various forms throughout the years. We've been about the same talent-wise. You could say, oh, we weren't playing slow pitch this year. Well, that's what the practice is for, okay? And a lot of other factors that led to us just not having the talent, just the raw talent. We brought a younger team this year, which I think helped us. If we would have brought the same team we brought last year to this, we wouldn't have won a single fucking game. I think we can all agree on that. But
team from the nursing home?
I think unless we are serious about building this team next year, we should consider taking a year off or packing it in general. As for me personally, I packed it in a couple years ago. And it really just depends on the morale of the people who went this past year and the bad taste in their mouth, as Bryce talked about, if they are going to even be willing to go next year. So this is something we'll just have to see as the season develops next year, and what the NWA tournament's going to be doing during the qualification process. So I don't know, but I think we're all in agreement that we just need to build a better team, a leaner team maybe. So
one without Jeremy Ray.
So, you know, the NWA tournament is not in our future for 2017. So what are we going to do now? Are we going to focus on the London tournament? Are we going to do the Amy for Africa tournament in Ashland again in August? Jeremy, you're the big tournament guy. Every time we participate in a tournament anywhere, you're there. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I, for one, won't be going to London. I know that there's a couple of teams going up to London from our league, and I think that's fantastic. And but the Amy for Africa, I'm really looking forward to doing. And there's a fast pitch segment that's 42 feet, and I am trying to drag Drew McClanahan out of retirement for that.
So just to wrap this segment up, if one of the teams is unavailable to make it to Morenci, we will then be tapped as next in line to be going. I just want to know, is there a contention plan in place to where Saved by the Balls is ready to mobilize should that occur? Or are we, since we didn't qualify, there's no plans to be going to Morenci? So, Jeremy, you're kind of the captain of the team here. I know, Bryce, you're sort of one of the ranking members on the team here. What is the answer to this question? It's a burning question.
We're going.
I was going to say, we really haven't talked too much about it because once I was told that that other team was going, you can't see the quotes, but that we pretty much just started looking for other tournaments and looking for something else to do. But, I mean, as far as who's willing to go, I mean, I'd be willing to go instantly only because I can. So it all depends on how many people we can actually get to go and how much leeway they would give us because, you know, giving 48-hour notice and having to get hotels and everything else like that, that's going to be a bitch to do.
That would be downright cruel, in my opinion.
It would be. Absolutely. Then they would just be, WSEM would be housing us at that point.
It sounds like there's not really an organized contention plan to get the team there
It's not organized. Still waiting. You know, we don't know if they're going to go or not. So, first team drops out, sooner we know, sooner we get it figured out.
Here's my thing, where the team that's most likely to drop out, they're really young, and they're having to have a GoFundMe or whatever to get the money raised. I'm feeling a team that will probably drop out in the last second if they're going to drop out. And if it were me, of course, I'm very bitter as a person in general.
Yes, you are.
The last time a team dropped out that I was there for was the Mississippi Yard League in 2014, and it really fucked up the pool play and really kind of put the tournament committee on its heels to really regroup and find out what they're going to do. I'd almost rather us not go. Should that be the case, just to, because if we can't get it together, then there's other teams that aren't going to be able to do so either with such short notice. We would really need a few days to know, so we can get things together, like hotels, like Jeremy was saying. So in my opinion, I think the only thing worse than not qualifying the tournament is to go because someone else couldn't make it. That's like a sloppy seconds thing for me, but that's just me personally. And not to talk down about our team, but I'm just saying, I think we should have punched our ticket already if we were going to go, for various reasons of whether or not we deserve to go, or if we would have gone, if this would have been different or that would have been different, doesn't change anything from the fact that we did not earn our spot into the tournament. That's my take on that.
I don't see us getting eight guys together on the fly that can just drop. I mean, we got guys that have lives.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, ball is life, but not that much life.
Well, pretty much what I'm going to say is that I still want to keep going to the national tournament because I still feel like I have something to prove. I don't like losing. I don't like the way we lost, and I'm still wanting to go up and, you know, turn some heads and actually show that we really belong on the national scale.
I think that wraps everything up pretty well. Before we say goodbye, I just want to remind everybody that we are always trying to make this podcast more accessible than it has been in the past for you, the on-the-go listener. As always, you can find our podcast library on our website at www.huntingwithball.com. Just click on Media and then Podcasts, where you'll find all our URLs linked. More recently, we've started uploading our podcast to www.huntingwithball.podomatic.com. And there you can download the episodes or listen in the player online or use the Podomatic app for Android or iPhone. You can also find us on iTunes. If you go to your podcast app, you can download our latest episodes there or listen. So find them in the iTunes store or use your podcast app on the iPhone. Search for Huntington Whiffle if you cannot find it otherwise. And subscribe so you don't miss a single fun-filled episode. We've got a special episode coming up for episode 32. It'll be the return of our thematic series where we explore the 32-bit music from games from the Sega Saturn and PlayStation 1 throughout while we talk about Wiffleball, of course. This will be the first time we've done this since the 16-bit episode. Jeremy Linton and Greg Sowers will be joining me again. They joined me on this episode unexpectedly, but which was a pleasant surprise, but I was planning on it being the return of the original members of the Huntington Whiffle League podcast, so we'll definitely have another reunion for that episode, and it's something to look forward to. As always, if you want to be a guest on this podcast, just let us know at huntingwhiffle@gmail.com or send us a Facebook message, and we'll get you on here. Signing off for Greg Sowers, Jeremy Litton, Jeremy Ray, and Bryce Clark, I'm your host, Josh Smith. We will talk to you soon. Bye-bye!